Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are Aviva, Tommaso, and Shirley, also known as, I can't resist, Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice. Hi, David. How are you?
Doing okay, Jill. I know that you always love our little combinations of titles, and I thought it was great that this week we could have three movies with one-word titles, each of which is a name.
And what I like even better is that you did that. That just it warms the cockles of my black heart.
Well, it didn't take much inventiveness on my part, because all three of these movies happen to be out right now streaming. They are easily available, and are all in their very different ways worth seeing, although some more than others. But let us begin with Aviva. Aviva is a movie by an Israeli filmmaker named Boaz Yakin, who made a terrific debut about a jillion years ago with a movie called Fresh. And since then, he's had ups and downs. I can't say he's exactly sustained a major career. But this movie, Aviva, is very ambitious, and in a lot of ways, it's very interesting. I don't think it's great, but it sure does attempt a great deal. Now, this is basically a love story between a couple of young people, one of whom is, of course, Aviva, that is the woman, and the other is a man named Eden. But I shouldn't have even said that, because both Aviva and Eden, and basically Aviva is the woman and Eden is the man, are played by two actors, one man and one woman. Now, this harkens back to many, a few decades ago, the very great surrealist filmmaker Luis Buñuel made a movie called That Obscure Object of Desire, in which the main character, a woman, was played by two different actresses. And Buñuel, being a surrealist, the changes between the two didn't seem to have any rhyme or reason to them. Sometimes in some scenes it would be one of the actresses, sometimes in some scenes it would be the other one. But the changes seemed to be arbitrary, because Buñuel was a surrealist and things were not exactly supposed to make sense. The gender bending in Aviva has a different sort of motivation. It is very much a reflection of and a comment on and a great playing with the whole idea of gender fluidity that has become so enormously important in our own day and age. So this is a movie in which genders are constantly being bent. Gender is constantly fluid. We have a man and a woman playing each of the main characters, who are a woman and a man. And there's all kinds of other things in the movie that are also very sort of mercurial and changeable and so forth. You really have to be on your toes if you want to follow all the ins and outs just of the plot of the movie, also the characterization. So basically, as for that plot, it starts off with these two characters, Eden and Aviva, corresponding with each other by email. One of them is in Paris, the other one is in New York. Then they both end up in New York, where they have a movie-style romance, and I guess it's also a real lifestyle style romance, where we have ups and downs and ons and offs, and times when they're passionate about each other and times when one or the other of them feels a lot less passionate, and other people come into the relationship and so forth and so on. So that's what the movie's about. One of them, by the way, Aviva, is a video artist, and so we have that also enters into the story and lends another a bit of complexity to it, since we have the as we have now that area of the video art being brought into it. Now, something else I have to mention, which is that this movie is overflowing with dance. And in fact, in each case, again, we have a team of two actors, male and female, playing the main characters. And one of those teams, one of the people who plays the male and one of the people who plays the female character are dancers and choreographers. So there's an enormous amount of dancing in this movie. And in fact, at the very beginning of the film, we are told very directly right into the camera that, we had to have either actors play dancers or dancers play actors. And, we sort of decided to do both. So the movie in that way, too, is very postmodern. Everything is always sort of shifting and changing before your eyes, and sometimes the characters will talk directly to us, directly to the camera. So all of these things are going on at once. Now, all of this makes for pretty exciting cinema. The trouble with the movie is that the actual storyline of it, this romance, is just not very interesting. It really isn't. And as the film unwound for roughly 2 hours, I kept on saying, well, you know, where is the depth? Where is the complexity aside from all the audiovisual flash of the film? And, you know, I just eventually realized it isn't there. So I wish that Aviva, on a level of character and on a level of narrative, had more depth. It does not have much of that. But it does have a whole lot of surface. And a whole lot of that surface is really, really eye-catching and quite splendid. And the movie, again, cinematically, is very ambitious and is sort of, in some respects, a nonstop thrill. So if you want to see something to keep your eyes and ears really engaged and hopping, then Aviva is a movie for you. If you want a story with deep storytelling or emotionally affecting romance, then not so much. Turning to our next film today, Tommaso. Now, this is a movie by Abel Ferrara, an Italian-American filmmaker with a fascinating career in a whole lot of ways. His best-known movie probably is from many years ago, Bad Lieutenant. But he's made a whole lot of movies that span all the way from really down-and-dirty exploitation movies early in his career, Driller Killer. How do you like that for a title? Ms. 45. Interesting movies, by the way. But, you know, real exploitation stuff, although it was kind of ingeniously made, all the way to more sort of high-flown art films, such as Bad Lieutenant, for example. I shouldn't say high-flown, but it has real artistic pretensions to it. Also, Ferrara's movies always have this deep religious, or almost always, this deep religious subtext. He's fascinated with especially Roman Catholic issues of suffering and redemption and guilt and absolution and things like that are always in his movies, even though his movies, again, tend to be really, really gritty and sometimes unpleasant to look at. So in this case, we have the main character whose name is Tommaso, and this character is an actor and also a filmmaker who's working on a new movie that appears to be some sort of a science fiction film. He is also a recovering alcoholic and drug addict. And he's living in Rome with his wife and little daughter. Now, all of this, and by the way, a character is played by the great Willem Dafoe, all of this is really true to Abel Ferrara's own actual life. Abel Ferrara was famously alcoholic and drug addicted for many, many years. Some of his movies barely got made because he was having such trouble with his addiction. So all of this is very, very close to him. And now, yes, now he has a young wife and a little daughter, and they are played in the movie by that actual young wife and little daughter. And Abel Ferrara has been working on a movie which is not all that totally different from the movie that the character Tommaso is working on in this movie. So basically what we have here is a movie which is obviously really, really self-reflexive, which is really kind of autobiographical on Abel Ferrara's part. And by the way, he's made a few movies over many years with Willem Dafoe. So Willem has become Abel's sort of on-screen alter ego. Now, the movie reaches one sort of turning point fairly early on when Tommaso is in a park and sees his wife obviously, well, canoodling with another man. And this really bothers him and disturbs him and kind of sets the movie off on a somewhat different. The movie's been sort of casual and sort of, oh, kind of this happened and that happened until this moment in the film. But it's actually never clear whether this really did happen. Maybe the guy is having some sort of a flashback. Maybe he's having some sort of a hallucination. Maybe his sort of underlying paranoia of his personality is just sort of bringing this vision to his mind. So it's not clear that this really, really happened. And I think this is quite fascinating, especially since Tommaso is about a character very much like Abel Ferrara, which is a very imaginative character, a character with huge fantasies that he realizes on film and in other ways. So all this kind of deepens the movie as well as complexifies it. So the movie then goes on to all kinds of other scenes and episodes. We have long sessions with Tommaso at his Alcoholics Anonymous type group, where he and others tell the story of their lives, and Willem Dafoe gives a bravura performance. Willem Dafoe is flat out one of the great actors of our time. And he is spectacular in this movie, even when the movie is sort of puzzling or a little off-kilter. Willem Dafoe gives it an emotional stability and a depth of character which just absolutely keeps it on track every step of the way. It's a marvelous, marvelous, marvelous performance. The movie ends up, I won't give away how it ends up, but it ends up on a really surrealistic note that brings Abel Ferrara's Catholicism really to the fore. And this may really off-put some moviegoers who have stuck with it this far. Other people it will fascinate. I think it's just terrific. I am fascinated with religion in the movies, not because I'm particularly religious, but because dealing with religious issues is a way of opening up your thoughts, opening up your imagination, opening up your mind to things beyond what's going on with us every day in our just ordinary quotidian world. And Abel Ferrara, I think, sees things pretty much that way himself. And he brings religion into this movie in a fascinating way, but he also really brings a whole lot of very sharp psychological insight. And I think it's a fascinating, fascinating movie, a very flawed one, but a terrific one. And Willem Dafoe, again, is at his very best, and you don't get it better than that. Final movie for today called Shirley. The main character of Shirley is the really, really, really famous author, Shirley Jackson, and justly famous. Best known probably for her short story, The Lottery, which is a truly legendary short story. And she's also written a lot of other stuff, a number of stories, for example, about a character known as the Demon Lover. She wrote basically horror stories, very disturbing, unsettling, unnerving fantasy stories. That was her forte. And she is the main character of the movie. But the movie is not a biopic. The movie is really a fictional movie that uses Shirley Jackson as the main character, but then spins a fictional story around her character and around her life as a writer and her life as a private person. Something similar was done several years ago with a movie about Deanne Arbus, the great photographer, that also just wove a completely fictionalized story, a very not very successful story, by the way, in my opinion, around this real-life famous artist. And that was not a good movie. Shirley is quite a fascinating movie in a lot of ways. By the way, it was directed by Josephine Decker, written by Sarah Gubbins from a novel by Susan Scarf Merrill, so all females involved in this. And it's good to know that, because the movie does not paint a very attractive or a very feminist portrait of its main character, Shirley Jackson, but it's very interesting. So, the movie deals with Shirley Jackson, and here's where we come into the story at the beginning of the film. She has been living for a number of years with her college professor husband on the campus of Bennington College in Vermont, where she is a drunk and a very crabby, unpleasant person who almost never leaves the house, and in fact, for that matter, spends most of her time in bed. And her poor husband, the college professor, who, by the way, is no prize himself, he's irascible and crusty and just sort of gruff and unpleasant. The two of them are living this life in this house. So the college professor manages to sort of entice a young couple, a young man who is an aspiring college professor. Well, let's say he's at the very, very beginning of his career and has no idea what shape that career will take. His name is Fred, and his very, very attractive young wife, whose name is Rose, Shirley Jackson's husband, entices them to come, and the young man is going to be his assistant at the college, and he offers them both a place to stay for a little while in the house with himself and his famous wife, Shirley. So they move in, and after a while, this becomes more of a semi-permanent arrangement, where they are expected to help out around the house, do cooking, stuff like that, because Shirley Jackson is too much of an alcoholic and a lazy person to do any of this, and the college professor himself is too crusty and unpleasant and wanting everything to revolve around him to do any of this. And they can't even keep a housekeeper on the payroll because people keep quitting because these two are so unpleasant. So there is our setup for the movie. This very young, fresh-faced couple, Fred and Rose, who move into the house with this unpleasant older couple, the great writer Shirley Jackson, who is now working on a novel, which her husband says she will never complete and she might as well give up right now, and the old college professor husband, who walks around saying unpleasant things like that. So that is what the movie is about. And the movie then gets into the subject of the novel that Shirley Jackson is writing, which is based on the real case of a young woman who went missing from the Bennington campus some years earlier and was never found. And Shirley Jackson wants to write a novel based on this true crime case. What makes all of this worth looking at primarily is the acting. Elizabeth Moss plays Shirley Jackson. She is such a courageous actress. She just plays the most unpleasant character sometimes. She just doesn't look nice. She doesn't sound nice. And she is excellent, excellent, excellent in the role. What a terrific actress. Michael Stuhlbarg plays her husband, Stanley Hyman, the old college professor. He, well, not old, but older. Michael Stuhlbarg is a wonderful, wonderful actor who I always enjoy watching, and he is excellent in this movie. The young couple, played by Logan Lerman and Odessa Young, also just first rate. So Shirley Jackson is a crusty movie, an irascible movie, a movie that kind of goes out of its way to be grating a lot of times, but it's a fascinating thing, and if you're interested in Shirley Jackson, even in a fictionalized version, it is not to be missed. So Shirley, streaming everywhere right now and well worth catching up with. And that is my very name-oriented story this week, Joe.
For which we thank you as ever, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films Aviva, Tommaso, and Shirley.